Good morning. It's 9:04 a.m. if you're joining us off-net or online. This is the Senate Finance Committee. We're meeting in room 532 in Juneau, Alaska, in the Capitol Building. Today is Wednesday, February 3rd, 2016. With me at the table, Vice Chairman Michicki.
Good morning.
Good morning. Senator Bishop.
Good morning.
Senator Dunleavy.
Good morning.
Senator Olson.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Senator Hoffman. Senator Kelly may join us later. He's working on other state business right now. With us this morning is a presentation on the new Sustainable Alaska Plan. It's the same packet from yesterday. Pat Pitney, Director of Office and Management, is at the table, joined by Commissioner Hoffback, if you'd like. If you could put yourself on the record, direct us to the slide that you'd like us to consider, and then please proceed with your presentation.
For the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm the Director for the Office of Management and Budget. I'm just introducing one slide, and then we will go to the 10-year plan packet. So if you don't have the 10-year plan packet,
they all have it. Ms. Pitney.
Perfect. So the new Sustainable Alaska Plan is a multi-year process, and it'll take us 3 years, fiscal year 17, fiscal year 18, fiscal year 19, before it's balanced. We have a spending target on unrestricted general funds of $4.7 billion, and that takes additional reductions from the current proposal of just over $4.8 billion, but there's also cost pressures that are going to cause increases, such as investments in the gas line. So it's taking into account both upward, downward cost reductions and the upward pressure for investments. One specific one and a large one is the gas line. So it'll have continued operating reductions, limiting oil and gas tax credits to $100 million a year, strategically utilizing debt, and I think we'll have some significant conversations about that today. General obligation bonds to fund a $250 million annual capital budget, and that a capital budget of that size is actually quite constrained. If you think about the transportation match and the sewer match and deferred maintenance, it leaves very little in terms of new projects. So it'll be a very tight budget. We talked yesterday about financing the existing pension payments, so that would be another strategic use of debt. And finally, financing the gas line construction and this, you know, early engineering and design process. We also, part of the plan is to utilize designated general funds and federal funds to preserve services. And so if there's an opportunity for us to use other fund sources to maintain a particular service, we're trying to do that to the greatest degree possible. Then we also want to, a major point in bringing on the new revenue sources is so we can maintain our savings balance, whether it's in the SBR or the CBR, because that balance gives us a steady revenue stream of somewhere between $100 and $150 million annually. And so to the degree we spend that down and then bring revenue measures on later, those revenue measures are going to have to be higher because we've lost that annual revenue stream. So the majority of the plan focuses on 17, 18, and 19, and then from 20 to 25, it's a very constrained spending approach thereafter. So really the main moving parts in the plan are 17, 18, and 19. So with that, I draw your attention to...
Ms. Pitney, could we pause for a moment?
Absolutely.
Are there questions from committee members on the foundation of where the administration is going with the proposal that they just outlined? Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Pitney, I'm I'm used to sort of creating a plan and then risking out different pieces of that plan not actually occurring for forces I may not be able to control. Do you have alternate plans with the less politically likely solutions removed? And then have you modeled, say an income tax doesn't go through, say the oil tax credits are different, or some of the various components just simply don't make it through the legislature? Have you sort of risked those out and modeled the remainder of the plan without them?
So through the chair, Senator Machicki, we have various models and what it means, what the savings difference would be if, for instance, we didn't implement taxes for 2 or 3 years. I don't have them with me or have that model up here, but it's one that we've put together really to make sure that we balance, but then the impact of if we didn't balance, how soon do we exhaust our savings? So we've looked at the impact of those, and for this presentation, this is our plan, and I will talk to the trade-offs of not doing particular pieces of the plan and what that means down the road.
Senator Machicki.
I think you can probably, if you and I were to split the plan into components and apply a probability of success of getting through both bodies with a signature from the governor, we'd probably be fairly close on what we put for a probability. Some pieces have a much higher probability of success than the others. Does the administration have the opinion that if we didn't, oil will come back to some improved number in that next 5 years, more likely than not, and maybe not what we're used to seeing, but a better number? So without a couple of those components, we're likely to be okay as well, and I'm sure you've selected a couple that are less likely to make it across the finish line and thought about what that might look like.
Commissioner Hoffbeck.
Chairman McKinnon, members of the committee, for the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue. We our model does incorporate the fact that we do expect recovery. So some of that's embedded in our base assumptions on that 3.3 draw that we've proposed. But what we have done is kind of look at if we come up $100 million short, $200, $300 million short in any given year on either reductions or new revenues, what that impact is on the next year and the year after. And we're actually putting together a matrix for House Finance, and we would be happy to share that with Senate Finance as well. So you can kind of see what the impact is, not necessarily if it's the income tax that doesn't pass, but if we're $200 million short, what that, because I guess the label on what the revenue source is isn't as important as the revenue source itself.
Thank you, Commissioner. If I could have the committee's support, I'd like to go off topic for a moment. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have some 7th and 8th grade close-up students that are watching us today. They're from my district, and I'm glad to have them see how government works, particularly the Senate Finance Committee, which is a key component of all the committees in state government. So will the close-up students please stand? They're from New Stewiacke, Kalignik, and Twin Hills, the Bristol Bay region, which is the sockeye salmon capital of the world. Give them a warm welcome.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Welcome to Senate Finance. Senator Dunleavy, if you could do me a favor, could you at a high level give the students a brief overview of why we're talking about what we're talking about and then proceed with your question? If not, I could do it.
That could be laced with a lot of opinion.
To the facts, if we could, about the challenge that the state is facing.
Folks, thank you for coming. This is the bank. This is the wallet for the state of Alaska on the Senate side, and over in the House, they have a similar committee. This is where we talk about money issues. And what we're talking about today is Some of us believe we don't have enough money to pay our bills, so we're trying to come up with ways to find more money to pay our bills. And so you'll see this discussion going on, I'm going to say, for a little while over the spring here, so we can come up with a way where if we're spending a dollar but we only have 50 cents in our wallet, how do we get that other 50 cents? So you'll be hearing things about taxes, other ways to raise more revenue. Okay? So basically that's it.
And the services that the people of Alaska receive in both small villages?
We pay for your schools. We pay for a whole bunch of things that occur in Alaska. And that's the stuff that we're talking about at the table. How do you keep paying for your schools when we have less money because the price of oil is going down?
Senator Dunleavy, thank you for that. Again, sometimes we forget that there are people watching that may not understand the context of an individual presentation or a bill that we have before us. Senator Dunleavy, back to the conversation in front of us, a 10-year plan and how that looks for the first 3 years. Your question.
Through the chair, can you just give me a little bit of an idea how the administration arrived at the level they believe we should be reducing government? You've come up with a plan that reduces government to a certain degree, but how was it arrived at? How was it decided that we couldn't reduce anymore? That if we reduce anymore, what would happen? What was that conversation? In other words, if we reduce $200 million, what were the ramifications that stopped the administration from going to that level, or $300 million, or $400 million? Why that level, and what was the nature of those discussions?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, it really came around on a program basis with each of the agencies. So what we have built in are the continuation of efficiencies and the two reform efforts that we know are going on, and then going through the programs of which ones we are willing to reduce and by how much. And there's two pieces that are happening as we're looking for reductions. For instance, you know, we had $140 million in reductions to get to a net reduction of $100 million because we have these offsetting increases, specifically the gas line and the rural engagement program, but the gas line is the vast majority of that. So it's looking at both how much you can reduce and then what are the cost pressures that are coming up that got us to that number. Within a particular agency, we asked them to look at the various programs. We asked them to look at, you know, what things could be privatized, and we have a couple of reports and RF requests for interest going out and feasibility studies on possible privatizing, where you could reduce some amount of, preserve the service but reduce the amount of money. It was the balance between those two. But we're going to have those reductions to afford the increases and still have a net decrease.
Just a clarification through the chair. Did you say rural engagement?
Rural engagement is a Department of Veterans and Military Affairs program. It's a proposal, one of three proposed increases. So gas line development for DNR, Department of Revenue, and Department of Law. That was about $38 million. And then one other investment was the rural engagement, which would strengthen guard presence in rural Alaska and provide essentially a ready workforce in the rural areas through the citizens that are there.
So, and just last question, Madam Chair. So in this environment, it was felt that adding $38 million to the budget under the heading of rural engagement was a necessity for the government.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, the gas line was $38 million.
I'm sorry.
And it's $1 million on the rural engagement. And we believe that the cost trade-offs for the having the ready, essentially almost like a volunteer workforce, but a ready and trained volunteer workforce for emergency situations, floods, those type of things. Available actually would be a cost savings in the future. So it's a very small investment on that rural engagement. The third priority that's part of our plan is not an unrestricted general fund piece, but is a right now through designated general funds, is strengthening our in-house finance capacity. We spend a lot of money having Wall Street manage Alaska's assets. A lot of those assets could be managed by in-house capacity at a much, much lower cost. And Commissioner Hoffman could speak to that, both on the permanent fund side and on the Department of Revenue side in greater detail. Those aren't pressures, but it's certainly a spend increase on designated general funds going forward.
Thanks.
Commissioner Hoffbeck, did you have anything to add to that?
Chairman McKinn, no, nothing that I think we haven't talked about before.
Thank you. Before, is there any other questions from other committee members? Before we move on, a couple things come to mind. Director Pitney, I'll go backwards. Senator Dunleavy just asked about the added expenditures in the $38 million category in reference to Department of Revenue and others that manage money in bringing folks in-house. And so I have the Department of Revenue's budget, and we've had trouble filling those investment positions. So we're asking for more, but it took over a year to, I believe we had three vacancies, and we filled two of the three, and now we're adding two more. So in this type of fiscal environment, as we move towards trying to do cost-effective measures to be efficient, why would we provide more money when you still have vacancies from the previous year that you haven't been able to fill? So, Commissioner.
Chairman McKinnon, for the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue. The idea is to try and stay ahead of the curve on this, and we freely admit we are having difficulty filling the positions. That being said, if the opportunity is there and we have applicants, we would like to have the ability to bring them on board, because we get a 3-to-1 or better revenue increase for the dollars we spend on the in-house investing. So I guess it's an opportunity cost. I mean, it would be good, and we would like to have the ability to have that option. But obviously, if we can't hire them, the money wouldn't be spent, and it would eventually flow back into the general fund. So,
thank you, Commissioner. Director Pitney, you talked about maintaining the balance in our savings account. When I read a report and review of the plan, I believe it was from Standard and Poor's, they indicated that for us to take the draw that the administration is proposing, I believe it was originally 3.2, and now it's been modified to a 3.3 number, $3.3 billion, that we would have to have a capacity in our savings account of about $100 million. So we're, in large numbers, about $35 million shy of what could fund state government going forward from that non-renewable resource becoming a renewable resource. So can you talk to the plan of how, if indeed we need the $100 million in savings, what's the administration's plan to get to to achieve the $100 million? $100 billion, I'm sorry. It's $100 billion that we need in savings.
Chairman McKinnon, that is correct. I mean, if we were just to launch a program where our savings would fund everything, that would take about $100 billion savings account. We have about half of that in the permanent fund. We have some additional monies elsewhere. And so the plan, quite simply, is that since we don't have that, we're going to have to supplement with other revenues in order to get us to the balanced budget. So we recognize we just simply don't have that capacity. The fund will grow over time, but not in any time in the foreseeable future will we be able to grow the fund large enough where it will support government entirely on its own. It's always going to be a combination of our earnings plus other revenues in order to fully fund the budget.
Commissioner, this is going to be dangerous, what I'm going to say, because I haven't thought it through. I'm just throwing it out as a consideration. But the people of Alaska are very concerned about maintaining their dividends. We hear from people across our state how important the dividend is to them. If indeed we need $100 billion, and you are asking folks to forego revenue, why wouldn't we directly drive the difference that you're asking them to forego the revenue into the fund so that they wouldn't be asked to pay? So it would help us on the spending side as well as the other side. Instead of drawing your $3.3 billion out to maintain the current level of government, why wouldn't we, in a concerted effort, shrink government to what some of us have been saying is right size? I don't think any of us know exactly what right size means, but if you're going to cap the dividend and you need $100 billion, it seems like there should be more of a long-term plan of how to get to the $100 billion so that Alaskans wouldn't have to pay income taxes or sales taxes or be struggling. Was there ever a conversation about driving more into savings through the capping mechanism?
Through the chair, Chairman McKinnon, that discussion was had, and quite frankly, the numbers aren't there to be able to drive everything into the savings account and draw out. Because of course, if once you put them into your savings, you only get whatever your sustainable draw is. You don't get the full use of those funds. When we ran the numbers and we came up with the 3.3, when essentially all of our production taxes are going into the fund already, we recognize we've got about $1 billion of that we're short. We've got 3.3 going in, another 8 or 9 or $1 billion in additional investment earnings and other taxes that are already in place gets us to this 4.2 level. We're about 5.2, and so that became the balance point. We need to close $1 billion and in order to get to a sustainable level. To cut $1 billion would be a very difficult thing to do. What the governor proposed was a balance of some new revenues and some cuts. But ultimately, there's a toggle switch in the plan that if and when we get to a point where we don't need the monies in flowing into the earnings reserve to fund government, that they'll toggle and start going in totally into the corpus. But that's years down the road before we get to that point. So if we could cut $1 billion out, we could be at essentially a sustainable level right now. But we looked at the numbers and we couldn't find $1 billion.
So, Commissioner, I appreciate that response. From the Senate finance perspective, at least, we proposed an additional $250 million worth of operating cuts last year. So we identified where you could find those savings, but that's history, so we won't go back there. The legislature did battle about some of those cuts. OMB Director Pitney, you talked about the pension obligation bonds, and that hasn't been received well with the legislature to date. And we understand that we're facing some pretty tough times, and we believe we have a challenge that we can meet. It was indicated in S&P's report and then the subsequent media coverage afterwards that the discussion of bonds or getting ready for our bond bank to place bonds on the market was one of the indicators that pushed the raters to come out with a review that was negative sooner rather than later. So I'm interested in how you're continuing forward, because as I understand it, the bond raters are watching the media coverage and the conversations in the finance committees. And as the administration continues to assert the pension obligation bond idea, and it's embedded in the budget that you've presented us, that may be causing tremors in the rating agencies also. So the legislature's tried to come out fairly strong and say, at this time, pension obligation bonds would not be recommended. And I've said that personally. That doesn't mean others at this table or around the legislature concur with that. But looking at our bond debts and obligations, I wonder if we're going to keep talking about that or if we can come to an agreement that that may not be the best use of the way to go forward now. I mean, it's always a trigger the administration can use, but if we continue to talk about it, there may be negative ramifications with our credit rating agencies.
Chairman McKinnon, I think 2 points on that. One is that we've made it very clear to the bond rating agencies that we will not move forward with it if we don't have the legislature on board. So I think, that I think gives them some comfort. And secondly, I agree with you. We need to land this one way or the other in short order, and so we can clearly message it to the bond rating agencies what our plans are. So,
thank you, Commissioner. And if Senator Hoffman, did you have a question? Commissioner, I wouldn't want the OMB's director's job. It's tough. She's working with departments and people that deliver services across Alaska that are valued in the communities. And quite frankly, the Senate Finance Committee appreciates everything that our employees do for both the legislature, for state government, and what they do in communities to help other Alaskans. The problem is a $4 billion hole. And what do we do together to plug that hole? So I'll move on lastly to the comment, Director Pitney, on preserving services and taking federal funds. And my only point there is I understand that we want to protect funds, but there will be additional costs to placing those federal funds in the queue and then having to come back with GF funds in a year or two. And so maybe we could discuss that later if you have a response now. I understand why you're doing it. I think it's admirable, just like I think your approach on reducing our workforce is admirable. Taking it through vacancies or attrition or retirement is certainly helpful to the employees that are moving through our system, and I commend you for that way to handle it. But it's getting a little harsher when we're still facing a $4 billion deficit. And Senate Finance is really looking for actual reductions that are long-term in perpetuity in the budget and not just one-time increments. Senator Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have one question. During these trying times that we're facing financially, I know that the administration is looking at least one constitutional change, and I'm wondering if that's the only constitutional change that I've read about, or are there others that are being contemplated, such as changing the way the CBR works with a three-quarter vote. I know that your last bullet point talks about maintaining a balance in the SBR or the CBR, and I wonder if you might comment on that.
So through the chair, Senator Hoffman, there is only the gas line constitutional amendment for that is being contemplated by the administration at this point.
And the other one that I think that many Alaskans may be concerned about, and I know that it's probably been contemplated, but using a substantial portion or reducing the permanent fund dividend substantially, I think has a lot of concern by many people, and some people have talked about voting on that, putting that to a vote of the people for an advisory vote and or a constitutional amendment to protect the remaining portion of the permanent fund that would remain, that would give the people of Alaska more assurances. Because one of your bullet points in an earlier slide talks about on slide 5, preserving the dividend program. The best preservation method of that dividend program would be the ultimate assurance that it would be in the Constitution. I'm wondering if that is given any discussion by the administration, because without that, I don't see how you could use the word preserve the dividend program.
Commissioner.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, we have not looked at a constitutional provision to protect the dividend. Certainly the dividend isn't protected by the Constitution right now, but I guess how we proceed forward will probably be largely determined by the decisions that are made on what methodology would be used for calculating the dividend going forward. And but at this point in time, we've not looked at a constitutional amendment.
And I guess my comment is that we should not use the word preserve a dividend program if we're not really preserving the dividend program. It's here in black and white, and it gives, I believe it gives the people of Alaska false pretenses. You know, it's what we're doing is substantially reducing the dividend program and leaving it hanging out there. So to me, as a legislator, I would say that the use of preserving a dividend program is not forthright with the people of Alaska. I understand the magnitude of the problem, and I agree with the chairman that we need to make additional cuts, drastic cuts. If we cut too deep, we can always relook at those and add them back, those programs back into the mix of things. But if we are not able to accomplish filling the 3.8 to $4.2 billion gap in the next 36 to 48 months, we're going to be facing a cliff without very many options.
Senator Dunleavy.
Just a brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Senate Finance is back on the record. It is 9:40. It is still February 3rd, 2016. Senator Dunleavy, did you have a question?
I should resist, but through the chair, a quick statement. At the break, I was asking these folks if they had heard of the Northern Tobacco Securitization Company, and Pat did, but a lot of people don't. And my point in bringing that up is this, and it kind of strikes to the heart, and I'll be brief, as to my philosophy on this budget. We cut $800 million last year, roughly $800 million. We took it out of the economy last year. And I asked people, when I asked people about that, I said, what did you notice? And they said, what are you talking about? I said, what did you notice? And they said, what are you talking about? I said, when you go to a restaurant or mall, what did you notice? Nothing. Now, I know that there were people that were impacted by those reductions, but overall, you didn't see a series of articles in the newspaper that sun was setting, that the roads were clogged with transportation going south with mattresses on their roof, et cetera. My point in bringing that up is, that goes back to the question I asked early on, how did you determine what our tolerance as a state was for cuts? Because that $800 million, the sky didn't fall. And so folks are saying and wondering, these are people that are following these hearings right now, if we could cut $800 million, when do we know where the threshold is for the state of Alaska? And that was the question I brought up earlier. Some of us believe the threshold is deeper, that we can actually cut deeper. And we'll find out as we go through this process. The reason I bring up the Northern Tobacco Securitization Company is nobody's heard of it except for Pat, and she wins the prize. And I'm not going to get into what it is, but the point being, until we scrub these budgets and really go through these budgets and really ask the hard questions, it's difficult for someone like myself to agree we need to be looking at taxes at this stage of the game, because I do strongly believe, I'm not just saying that, I believe that there are probably efficiencies that we're not aware of, that if we are forced to go that route and look at the budget and with the eye on reductions and efficiencies, I think we can find more efficiencies for the people of Alaska, because in the end, if we're going to ask them to pay out of their pocket for some of these things, we better be able to articulate to them what we're asking them to pay for. Not just give us taxes, but what we're asking them to pay for. And I think we still have a long way to go, and I just highlight those two issues of the $800 million and this little securitization company that has sold upwards of $800 million of bonds on future tobacco taxes that we spent already. Just saying that's part of what's going to drive some of our philosophies. So we're just trying to find out where you came up with the concept of the cuts that you have may be all at this stage of the game the state can tolerate. Thanks.
Director Pitney, did you have a response? You don't have to respond, but if you have one.
I think through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, one concept that came up over and over and over is, what kind of state do we want to live in? And what are the services we as Alaskans expect? And measuring it through that lens, yes, there draconian cuts could have been made, and we could show tremendous pain, we could show tremendous economic recession, but we as a state have many options to have a state that we want to have. And I think that dialogue about what's the appropriate spending and your scrutiny of the budget is an important piece of the process to moving to closure.
Thank you, Director Pitney. Senator Bishop.
I know we've got a presentation here in front of us, and the chairs, we're wanting to get through it and hear from the administration. I would love to make the other side of the argument to my colleague here to the right, but I won't get into it today because we're going to have ample time going forward. And so I would just differ in a little bit in the fact that I know there are people out there that own businesses that are looking to lay off upwards of 150 construction workers per contractor and more going forward. So we'll have time to dive into that a little deeper going forward. And it's just a respectful rebuttal, that's all.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. And Alaska's unemployment rate is almost 1.1% higher than the national average now. So while investments in our capital budget from 2008 forward helped Alaska not suffer from that recession that the rest of the United States went through, Alaska is now faced with its own particular challenge. Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just back on the subject of what you're calling the Alaska Permanent Fund Protection Act, I just want to remind folks that The SBR is gone. CBR, if things remain relatively constant, will be gone in FY18. The earnings reserve will be gone a couple years after, right? So I think the act is appropriately titled. I'm not sure that I like the preserving the permanent fund dividend from a slide, the slide we were looking at just a moment ago. Without doing anything, the permanent fund dividend goes away in a very brief period of time, and Alaskans need to understand that. If we sit here and we say that we have the potential to go medieval on this budget and take it down to the point of where we think we're going to meet revenue levels, that's simply unrealistic. I mean, we all have one of these. I hold it up once in a while. I want to remind people this isn't a rhetorical discussion. When you're talking about numbers, they're facts. And those facts show us, even if we stay at today's price, we have that gap. If we have downward pressure on the price of oil, it gets, if you don't think it's ugly today, think about what that looks like. I mean, we certainly have room to cut. We have substantial room to cut, and I know this team will keep downward pressure on the spending, but it's just simply not reality to make it seem like we can't consider being creative with some draw that will fill part of the gap, and that we shouldn't be considering. I've spent my entire life trying to keep the price of being an Alaskan low. I did as a mayor, and I do in this group, but it's just a sort of a paradigm reset right now with the size gaps we're looking at. I don't want to put the impression out there that we could actually cut enough to make it work. We have to continue cutting. That's a very important piece of this. But we've got real fiscal problems here that don't just, we can't wish them away. We have to work together and get pretty creative on how we're going to fill them.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Going back to the previous comment by the Senator from the Valley there, you know, as far as, I'm not sure where he is, the people he's coming from, but I know in the district that I come from, there's been a significant amount of people that have been affected by the $800 million that was taken out. Public safety is one of the big things that we see where the troopers don't have the ability to go out to provide public safety, and we're fully dependent on VPSOs, and those places without VPSOs are, you know, at their mercy. Same with corrections, where we've got people that are on a traveling fees that can't even move. And what's more significant to me probably is the issue of teachers, where we have to cut out the Head Start programs that are out there. You know, I've got little children, and so they're directly affected by that, and we are too. And I, you know, my children will survive, but it's other children that are out there that are put at a disadvantage. And I hesitate to say this, but the big thing that I see and have been made aware of is that with Health and Social Services cutting back 5% on their behavioral health program, the idea that we're seeing more suicides out there, that's a direct impact that you know, I wish we had a better handle on. And so I just want to make that comment as well.
Senator Bishop.
Just last point. I'd like just to make a comment on spending. In my opinion, there's two types of spending. One that provides services, and we will come to an agreement on what that is. But there's also what I call good spending, spending that creates wealth.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. In response to one of the statements that was just made as far as the reduction on behavioral health services, if we could get a response, Director Pitney, I believe that spending on behavioral health is actually scheduled to go up with some of the services that the Medicaid program will provide through the expansion that the governor did by executive order. Is that accurate? What you showed us was a cost shift from general fund spending over to federal spending under specifically the behavioral health model. And then on top of that, specifically Senator Olson, there is a grant that's available and coming into the state of Alaska to help schools specifically with suicide prevention that Senator Murkowski has been working on, and I believe that has already been signed into law, so there's new money for that particular issue that's coming into the state federally, and it will drop down, as I understand it, into small school districts, a fairly small amount, and we've been working at the Suicide Prevention Council, of which I serve on our behalf, to see if we can join those funds together to do larger programs in rural Alaska with the districts versus the individual schools structurally just getting that new funding. Director Pitney, did you have, if I've gotten it wrong, please set the record straight.
Senator McKinnon, I think the only nuance on the behavioral health is that the behavioral health grants to particular nonprofits are exchanged now for coverage for individuals who would use those centers. So from a business perspective on those behavioral health centers, it's a real change versus having a direct grant from the state to take in what was not covered for behavioral health to now the Medicaid funding following the person. So there, I think over time we're going to see some changes in the delivery system, but it is covered, and in fact, with Medicaid expansion, there's a population that has access to behavioral health that didn't in the past, so it's a very good thing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. If we could conclude this slide, I really appreciate the candid conversation and perspective from Senate Finance Committee members. Alaska needs to know that we are all working hard. The administration has brought forward a proposal that they're in the process of defending to the legislature, that they've considered the appropriate policy choices, and that they are in the process of trying to convince legislators that we should appropriate behind their proposal. Mm-hmm. So I, again, thank the Senate Finance Committee for a candid discussion. Alaskans need to know that we all have trepidation about different points along the way on the administration proposal, but that we all want the same thing, and that is a healthy Alaska, where services can be delivered and can be paid for in a sustainable way. Director Pitney.
So I was going to walk through the plan, but if it's the pleasure of the committee, I would just introduce you to a few pages that I believe are that are very valuable to your understanding of our plan. On page 2, there's a table that is provides some direction relative to where we are, what our expectations are going forward on the unrestricted spending, unrestricted general fund spending.
Director Pitney, could you pause for just a moment?
Absolutely.
For those who might be listening at home, Director Pitney is referring to a plan that should be up on our website. If you go into the Senate Finance Committee, you should find the documents there. It's titled A New Sustainable Alaska Plan, Pulling Together to Build Our Future. It's from the office of Governor Bill Walker. It says FY 2017 10-year plan. It was produced by the Office of Management and Budget, and the document is dated January 22, 2016. Director Pitney has asked us to turn to page 2 of that.
And Senator McKinnon, just in the interest of time, what is your time frame? Because I can make this go in 10 minutes, or I can make it go in...
The Finance Committee has 45 minutes available to us. We should start winding down. You have 15 or 20 minutes. I'm sure questions will divert us for the rest of that time. So where you need to highlight, committee members certainly have had this plan for a while. So if you want to go high level, that's fine with me. Is that okay with the rest of the committee? So 15 minutes, give it your best, and we'll ask questions.
Great. Thank you. So on page 2, I've talked about these. I'm table 1. I'm at the unrestricted general fund operating budget. So we've talked about these three categories of spending: education, which includes K-12, university, and AvTech. And the plan has the overall perspective of preserving education. We have the FY17 request, and then the change that we see from FY16 to FY17, and then the change FY15 to 17, both in percentage and amount. And then on the far right, our plan plan change forward to 19. And so on education, our plan includes the FY17 budget and then no increase going forward. No increase, but no decrease on education. And so the intent is to preserve education. Then the second large category, health, safety, and justice. And this includes health and social services, the court system, corrections, public safety. And to the degree that we can get savings through the reform efforts that are active right now, that is where we're going. That's one of the additional reductions we see for fiscal year 18 and 19. So we see continued reductions there. The next category is kind of all other. It's transportation and all other agencies, and so this was what people would see in general government. To date, with this proposed budget, there's a 27% reduction already in those areas of government for almost $200 million in savings, and we see continued reductions in those areas, and that's largely going to be through changes in service, changes in funding sources, so reduced service or changes in funding sources and efficiencies, but a continued reduction in that other government category. Going down to other operating expenses, oil and gas tax credits, we've talked a lot about the oil and gas tax credit reform. We want to go from what was a steady state of anywhere from $400 to $600 million, or technically $700 million this last year, down to a steady state of $100 million going forward. And this year's budget includes $73 million with the transition fund for the reform. So that would be the note. So debt and retirement, we've talked a lot about the strategic use of debt. The debt and retirement includes financing our pension obligations and going with a very constrained general obligation bond approach that would fund a capital program of about $250 million a year. So you see that the debt and retirement figure is, and then going forward, this is where our natural gas pipeline would be financed, would be in the debt section. Community revenue sharing. This is restoring to 50 in fiscal year 17 and bringing community revenue sharing up to 60 going forward. When government spending will be very constrained going forward, our revenue plan is a very, very flat revenue plan, inflation-only growth. That will push all of the previous development costs that the state has funded for community governments back to the community. There just isn't room beyond the community revenue sharing. So this is preserving that community revenue sharing portion with the understanding that under a very constrained budget going forward, that there's not going to be the funding from the state to the communities that previously existed. The other capitalization and transfers are things like renewable energy, a very small category. And lastly, capital today is 195 with the justice reform, but 190 for real capital items. If we fund capital by debt, we can get to a steady state of something around $75 million for those things that are in the capital budget that are not bondable. If we choose not to do debt and fund straight up cash, that particular difference would be from the roughly $75 million for kind of the non-bondable capital expenditures to $250 million with only a small decrease on the debt service side. So that would be a significant change that we would see modeled. You see the investments going forward, gas line project, justice reform, rural engagement, and then other priorities yet to be determined. We know they're going to be smart money investments that we have to preserve for that will offset some of our savings, and definitely the gas line is a major piece of that. So this is a directional piece. There's, I'll take questions here, and then we'll go to some of the specific trade-offs, for instance, for the GO bonds and the debt impact on that, and then into savings. So, but I'll take questions here.
Questions from committee members. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to delve into two areas. The first one is the community revenue sharing program. I believe the balance there is $115 million, and everyone is probably well aware that there's a three-year draw on that. In order to achieve the $50 million, I believe the administration is going to request a $35 million supplemental that would bring the fund up to the $150 million, and then we'd have the payout, as is stated here, of $50 million. That would drop the fund down to $100 million. And in order to restore the $60 million, you would have to add in FY17 an $80 million addition to bring it up to $180 million to get the one-third payout of $60 million. So I don't see the how do you put in the additional $80 million in FY18, I don't see it here, in order to have the payout of $60 million. That would be the first question. And the other question that I have is on the funding levels of education, health and social services, and justice, and then transportation. You have FY16 and 17 of $140 million reduction. This year, your reduction is $100 million. And how does that $100 million reduction that you have said in the governor's state of the budget compare with the $140 million here?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I'm going to take your second question first and then go back to your first question. The $140 million is net of the key investments below. So, I mean, or is inclusive of the investments below. So we had to cut, we had to reduce. So I won't use the word cut. We had to reduce our unrestricted general fund spending by $140 million. Then if you look at key investments, we had $38 million for the gas line, continued gas line development, and $1.3 million for the Rural Guard program. Those two are agency operating increases that if you take the 140 and you subtract those two investments, you get to a net $100 million reduction in unrestricted general fund spend. So on your second question, you stated it appropriately. We have proposed $35 million additional dollars for funding the Community Revenue Sharing Fund, which then would allow for a $50 million payout in 17. Yes, it's actually, it was part of the appropriation bill 138. Is that right? Senate Bill 138 or 137, whichever the operating budget bill is. So it's part of that operating budget bill that we proposed on December 15 as capitalizing the fund in this fiscal year. The it would take $80 million to get to $60 million next year. Our intent is to capitalize by an additional $60 million to bring it to $60 million over time. So it wouldn't go from $50 million in 17 to $60 million in 18. It would go from $50 million in 17, capitalized by $60 million, so it would tick up over time.
So in FY18, what do you anticipate the payout for the communities? Because one of the concepts of the revenue sharing program was that it stretched out over 3 years so that communities can know what to budget for in the second and third year.
So through the chair, Senator Hoffman, our intent is it's like $53 million. If we capitalize by $60 million by the end of 17, if we capitalize by $60 million, then the payout would be $53 million. That would increase to $55 million, would increase to $58 million in next year.
And I guess the problem that I have with that is that we are asking other departments to either take reductions or even hold their own, including education. And it would seem that when we are looking at the overall budget, everybody should be participating in the reductions and in future years, in order to restore the $60 million payout, we would be actually increasing the spending in that area. And although I am a very, very strong supporter of revenue sharing, the revenue sharing program, I believe that everything should be on the table, and there's the possibility that there should be some belt tightening in this program as well.
Any other comments on revenue sharing? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As I look at the numbers here, and this is maybe off topic and more of a public policy discussion, but it's my understanding that if for some reason you decided to go ahead and raise the 22% for the PERS that you're subsidizing the communities for, that you would have savings in this as well. Has that been complicated and contemplated, and is that in this table?
Through the Chair, Senator Olson, the administration is very strong in very strong support of maintaining the state's on-behalf payment and maintaining the 22% PERS rate, and this reflects financing that on-behalf pension obligation.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. The comments are mine and mine alone, not any committee members. Director Pitney, when most of us were here and passed, voted on the revenue sharing bill, at least a majority, I believe, may have been here. And so that program was meant to step down, as Senator Hoffman said, not ramp up in tough times. And so other people are having to pay for a system that we can't afford any longer. And so I'm having difficulty with the administration's approach to revenue sharing. I support the program also. I especially support rural communities that don't have other ways and don't have taxing authority to actually go after other ways to support local government and being able to communicate with state government. But to set an expectation that they're going to receive more money when the state is facing its largest magnitude shortfall in our history seems like setting them up for planning inappropriately. And I'd be happy to work with the administration on rewriting the revenue sharing portion of Alaska state statute, but at this time, with what's been presented, there's no way that I could support, again, personally, Senator McKinnon, an increase to revenue sharing on a supplemental when you're setting up another expectation of not preparing for what Alaska is actually facing. So it seems disconnected in what we're talking to local communities about. We absolutely value communities participating with the state in government-to-government exchanges, but to increase a program when we're asking foresters to retire, public safety to shut down helicopters and not be able to respond, it doesn't make sense to me. New topic, if Senator Bishop, I'm sorry, Senator Dunleavy.
Just going back to the $38 million for the pipeline, just want to clarify, that action was already taken in the special session, or is this an additional $38 million you're asking for going forward?
Through the Chair, Senator Dunleavy, this is the fiscal year 17 funding amount for the agencies going forward. In the supplemental and special session, the supplemental was for the FY 16 to get through the FY 16 fiscal year on the gas line.
So for clarification, and for the public, the action that we took in the fall was for what?
There were two pieces three pieces that we took in the fall. One was to buy out TransCanada, and that was a company that was working on behalf of Alaska. Secondly, there was the amount. TransCanada was a partner doing a particular piece.
Right, but that $30 million, the amount of money in the fall compared. I'm just trying to get clarity for folks that are listening. The actions that we took in the fall amounted to how much money?
Through this chair, Senator Dunleavy, in total, 157, of which 144 was going to the pipeline project and 13 was associated with agency operating. Right. The 38 is consistent with the 13.
But the 38 is moving forward. It was not part of that vote in the fall.
Correct.
Okay, that's all I need to know. Thank you.
Senator Bishop, followed by Senator Michiki.
Oh, we'll get into the 38 when we come back to full finance after subcommittee, and it's all new money, and so I'm on it.
Senator Bishop, on that point too, I have Department of Revenue and Department of Law's budget. It's interesting that the administration is asking for one-time money for what may be a reoccurring cost, but I think that their assumption may be that it's more palatable to the legislature to look at it as one-time money since it's a project-oriented request. Senator Michiki.
Just a statement, Madam Chair, and it's back on revenue sharing, which I'm a huge supporter. It's been very important in my district. There are many projects. Well, I guess philosophically we're getting to the point where we have to redefine need in our state as we start reducing spending. I think at some point we have to reevaluate that those monies are spent for life safety issues and not community centers and things where they've been used in the past. It's been great. We've been able to share that, but you're going to be asking the same communities to tighten up in every other service. It just seems counter that we're going to reinvest and cut back on critical services, and you sort of talked about that. But if you don't change the program to a program that funds critical need for rural communities, it's very difficult to support moving forward. So can you explain the philosophy of the administration when we're cutting back in every other critical service and have to look at things like education and health and social services, why you're so strongly supportive of increasing the investment in revenue sharing?
Through the chair, Senator Michiki, it really comes down to a forward-looking perspective on the communities and the local government. The state, under this plan, will transition to a very strict allowance. There won't be the volatile up and down revenue. There won't be the ability for the state to come in and help local governments. And so what the local governments outside of revenue sharing have depended on state funding to do just won't be available in the future. And so if we can keep the local governments with strength to take care of the issues at that local level going forward, then it's the balance. Because there just isn't going to be the named community grant programs that existed in the past where, you know, through the Department of Commerce and Economic Development, we could pass money to the various communities. This budget is built very tight. The revenue structure is built very flat. It's keeping the local governments capable of managing that local government as the local governments are going to have to take on more of the burden in the future.
One
follow-up, Senator Michiki, followed by Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you plan on tightening the criteria? And you know what? You can say that the state will not have the dollars to support local communities, but every dollar supports local communities. And I understand, again, many of my communities have counted on the program in the past, but some of those very communities no longer have response from burglaries from the Department of Public Safety. Some of those communities will not be, the grader's not going to show up at 4:30. I mean, you're talking about critical services. If you don't tighten the criteria of where those dollars are spent, it's just going to be difficult to watch. And I hate to use the example of a community center, but I think everybody gets it. It's going to be difficult to watch a community center be heavily invested in when they're not when they can't count on trooper protection showing up when they need it. And this is nothing against the troopers. They've just been cut back so far that they have to prioritize. So is the administration going to come forward with a bill that provides a critical service criteria for municipal revenue sharing?
Director Pitney.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, under this plan, our intent is to fund the current community revenue sharing. I wouldn't say that it wouldn't be something we would entertain for a conversation, but we do believe strongly that we have to have strong local governments, especially in the time we're going forward. That, you know, because in addition to community revenue sharing, there were a lot of dollars flowing out of discretionary funds from every legislator and from the governor's office to communities to support communities, and now each and every local government is going to have to make those hard choices, and between the community centers and protection and roads and so forth. So I would say it's certainly worth a conversation, but under this plan, we would like to see community revenue sharing go forward.
Senator Hoffman.
Yes, I would like to see community revenue sharing go forward. But, you know, the communities that I represent for snow to address snowfall, they run the snow machines over the snow, and that's what happens, or they wait until the spring comes by. They don't have graders going by, and I'd say the vast majority of the communities that I represent don't have the luxury to have a community center to try to even keep open, let alone heat. So I would say that the communities that I'm looking at, they depend on revenue sharing maybe close to 90% of their income. But I'm sure that the larger communities in the state, revenue sharing may only represent 3 to 5% of their income. So by eliminating the revenue sharing program, I believe many communities will shut their community doors, and I don't want to see that happen. So that is why I think that while we look at how important the revenue sharing program is in different areas of the state, I would say in rural areas it's way more important to the communities I represent. But that doesn't mean that we need to continue at the same level. The need for services in rural Alaska from the revenue sharing program is very minimal. And what I'm hoping to see with a possible scaled down version is that those communities can at least keep their municipal doors open, not provide vast levels of service, and to try to get into saying what those dollars are needed for or can be spent on, I think is just going to be a bureaucratic nightmare and a waste of dollars.
Senator Machicki.
Just to quickly clarify, Senator, my specific reference was to increase because of the increase in the investment in municipal revenue sharing, not the program as it exists.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Director Pitney, Commissioner Hoffbeck, Senate Finance stands ready to work with you on a new community revenue sharing program. I haven't heard a lot of support at this table for increasing investment in that program in these tough times. But we do recognize, and I shouldn't be speaking for other people, I recognize the need, specifically in smaller communities with no taxing authority, the need for some kind of state assistance in these new waters, uncharted waters that we're getting ready to go through. And so you've heard comments from several people around the table on community revenue sharing. We'd like to keep it as it is. We just don't know that that's possible in this particular climate. And, you know, this is an overall assertion, but what do I say to community members that are asserting that the administration is protecting the budget instead of actually implementing a course forward to reduce the budget? And it's been expressed in different ways here today, but what strategic moves and at what level is the administration doing to steer us away from the cliff before we asked Alaskans to participate with their pocketbook and what they currently have as disposable income, because all of that is going to affect our economy. And the governor, right or wrong, vetoed tax credit money that we owe last year. And so if we want to reach back around to that conversation, I am happy to take on the conversation about tax credits and why those are good or bad, whether they need to be changed or not, in the governor's proposal. But have you done the evaluation to know how that's going to hit the economy, with how many jobs will be lost? Because as we invest tax credits in an industry that supports a third of Alaska's economy, when you're extracting those credits from the economy, there's going to be, you know, an impact on the job market based on those tax credits and how they were employed to put Alaskans to work. And so I would tell you what the Senate Finance Committee has discussed at a very high level. One, that when we're looking at any proposal from the administration right now, we're looking at impact to the fiscal crisis. So are you adding to the crisis, or are you helping solve the problem? And the second thing that we're looking at is, how does it affect individual Alaskans, and where do those Alaskans work and live? Is it affecting a rural community differently than it's affecting an urban community? Is it putting more people on the unemployment or retirement line? How is industry being affected, and which industry are we impacting by each of these moves? And so when you look at revenue sharing, some of us believe that is impacting rural Alaska in a more disadvantaged way as we ramp down that program. When you look at tax credits, then we're starting in this group at least to talk about the employment in a third of our economy. What will that do, and does it impact individuals who may move and go to work somewhere else? How is that money turning in Alaska's economy? And so these are just some of the things that Senate Finance is trying to look at as a filter to move forward in evaluating the administration's proposals. Senator Bishop.
Just to segue, just to comment on your comments, that all tax credits affects a third of our budget, our workforce, but that, depending on the price of oil, drives 90% of your revenue, or in this case today, 73 or 74% of our revenue. So every one of these items in this magnitude on this budget, you know, it's almost of constitutional convention scale, where you bring 60 lawmakers together and have a discussion. So, and they're also very important. It's, I think everybody has realized the magnitude of the problem before us. And so, I just wanted us to all be careful going forward that we make the right moves going forward. And if we have to take a step back and look at something and scrub it harder, and it's not because I want to slow down what the administration is trying to do, but I just want to make sure that what we do is our best work.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Director Pitney, Commissioner Hoffbeck, again, we have groups that are organizing to try to make sure the legislature acts. And this Finance Committee is willing to act, but as Senator Bishop said, we need sharp pencils, and we need to make sure that we're moving the right direction. And we need to have the cuts to right-size government before we start talking to Alaskans about revenue. And when we hear programs and comments, I'll move to education, and it's just a comment, and we welcome your feedback. We're preserving education. Well, this is not the first media coverage of the latest data collected by the federal government shows uniquely high and unwavering spending on education in Alaska, including Anchorage. It goes on to say that in fiscal year 2013, Alaska spent $2.4 billion on education in 54 school districts. If you read another article that's been out there, it talks about us being in the bottom 10 for results in that system. And we've heard the governor in the State of the State speech talk about system change to education. We have the chairman of the education committee sitting at this table. We are interested in how this administration is proposing to change that system so it's efficient and effective for the students that are in the system. Money has not achieved the results that we had hoped for our children. And if that's not fair, committee members, please correct me. Director Pitney.
Senator McKinnon, message received. I don't know that there was necessarily a question in there. The group coming together on education will be open, and there will be legislative participation, and we look forward to that conversation. Education is our future. If you look at pretty much any service in Alaska, whether you're in business, in construction, in legislative branch, Department of Revenue, not so much Department of Revenue, they're actually pretty lean, but Department of DNR, Fish and Game, if you look at spending in Alaska, it's going to be similar to that spending recognition that you have for education. We want to look for efficiencies. We want to bring that down, but we want to bring it down over time in a very considered fashion so that we have the Alaska that Alaskans want to live in.
Director Pitney, I appreciate that, and I know it's a huge challenge. For the last 10 years, I've spoken with individual classroom teachers and principals asking them how we are going to improve the system so our students have an opportunity to compete globally. And I hope that in the next 10 days, we can have something from the administration that is showing systemic change to education, or at least a process for how to start talking about that change, because if you expect the legislature to sit back and allow yet another year to go by without the administration supporting change to give our students increased opportunities, I think that that would be a mistake. I think that people want to see the administration lead on this issue. The reports are in. They are not good for our students. We know that teachers individually are struggling in classrooms and face huge challenges. We respect the teachers that are in the classroom as well as those that are helping support the classroom. But something is not going right in the classroom for our students to achieve, and how do we work together? There's not a person at this table or in this body that or the other body that doesn't support education. It's just that the current system that we have is spending a lot of money with not a lot of positive results. That's not fair. There are a lot of positive results, but overall the numbers, when we look at how our students are faring in a very general way, they are not faring well, both nationally or internationally. And there's not one member at this table that hasn't talked about how they support education and how we'd like to see our students perform better. Senator Michicki.
I'm going to take your comments and increase my altitude to about 80,000 feet. And just, this is more of a philosophical statement. I mean, there are some that believe that government is our economy in Alaska. And there are some that believe that industry and the job creators are the way that you should lean, right? I happen to be somewhat in the middle of that, those two statements. But this budget and the plan, which, as you know, many pieces of it I very much support. Some pieces go too far in the preservation of government the way it currently sits. And that's a very temporary situation, because part of this plan reaches out to industries heavily. Other parts reach out to individual Alaskans that are our producers, and that just means hardworking Alaskan families. And the more you try to preserve government as it sits, the less interest the producers have in participating in that system. There has to be a balance. I think we all agree with that, right? Where that balance sits is less spending than this plan preserves and less impact on the producers and the industries than it has in its components. And that's a very general statement, but I think it sounds like this group likely wants to move a little bit more toward a little less government and a little more dollars left in the pockets of Alaskans. And I don't have a problem with revenue, I will tell you that. But let's keep the industries that employ Alaskans working and do that by being as creative as we can on reducing cost. And I'll tell you, in the poll I sent to my constituents, they said they are willing to support earnings reserve usage and a draw. They are willing to support revenue, but by golly, I'd better look them in the eye and tell them that we have created that balance on reducing the size of government as well. So this plan doesn't feel that way, that's just my personal opinion, and I'll be looking at ways to make it feel a little bit more that way.
Thank you, Senator Mitchie. Director Pitney.
Through the chair, just a quick response, Senator Mitchie. The balance is an important component. What this plan does is puts out the baseline, and as suggestions from the appropriating body come forward, those can all be debated and discussed, and then people can understand, what is this the right size, and what is another reduction in this particular area mean, and what does it mean in this area, and have that dialogue in a very transparent and open way so Alaskans can weigh in, and there's the decision from the appropriating body of what is the right size. But we believe looking at that principle of sharing the burden, looking at both reductions and increases and what things we need to preserve, especially like the ongoing capital program where it went to virtually zero last year, it's virtually zero this year. $250 is not a significant capital program for our state and very constrained. So I think it is, you're right, a balance, and that's what this process is built on.
Senator Mitchie.
One last sentence. In a nutshell, at $107 a barrel, the government of Alaska had the potential to create an economy. At $30 a barrel, that potential is significantly diminished, and we have to look at the private sector in a way that allows them to provide so that we can continue. I mean, it moves in the other direction quite clearly. Just want us to keep a focus on the potential of both sides in the extreme two price environments I just mentioned.
Thank you.
I want to draw, Director Pitney, please.
Finally, draw your attention to page 14, skipping all of the middle, but going down to kind of where we are with the savings, and just close with where we will land in our overall savings over time. And many of the proposals in the plan on the savings hit actually at the end of this fiscal year, so you'll see them in the FY16 column. And if we start at the top of the FY16 column, we anticipated a $10 billion. Actually, let's drop all the way down to the combined savings at kind of halfway down the page where we see total savings beginning balance, so that we don't differentiate between the CBR and the SBR, but just looking at the savings balance.
So if I could, if you go three boxes down, basically, that actually contain numbers, it's the top line of the third box. Is that right. Accurate?
And so in 15, we had a starting balance of $15.8 billion in our combined CBR-SBR savings. At the beginning of FY16, we had $10.3 billion in the savings.
Director Pitney, just so Alaskans understand, is that where the $3 billion deposit into the PERS happened?
Correct. $3 billion of that was into the PERS and TERS, which was a tremendous policy call, has reduced our on-behalf payments from what would be $600-800 million down to around $250 million. And then there was another roughly $2.7 billion to fill the gap. Then in FY16, at the beginning of the year, so the beginning of the year we're operating in today, our savings balance is $10.3 billion. The draws from our savings in this plan include filling the deficit, so roughly $3.4 billion between the two accounts, filling the deficit, actually $3.6 billion is one. The second is the $3 billion deposit into the earnings reserve to accommodate the Permanent Fund Protection Act and that earnings reserve draw, making the earnings reserve balance robust enough to use our sustainable draw, and then $1.2 billion for oil and gas tax credits. Leaving an end-of-year savings balance of about $2.7 billion. So that $2.7 billion then becomes an asset base that if we drew 7% on average from that asset base, we could draw a maximum of close to $190 million in 2017 if we were just drawing a sustainable amount. In fact, we're going to draw $426 million to balance it. But going forward, you see that the earnings or the savings balance remains around drops down as low as $2.4 billion and then ticks up over $3 billion. And the biggest thing is this plan maintains an ongoing savings level if implemented, and allows us on a very sustainable manner to take anywhere from 150 to 100 to 150 million annually as a revenue draw. And so one of the main purposes of the plan to get to sustainability earlier than later is to preserve that savings amount so that it can be a backstop in case we have an emergency, can be a backstop if we have a major investment that has a significant return for the state, and then lastly, can be used as an annual revenue stream just based on the earnings. So I'll leave you with that last piece, because I believe that's one of the biggest components of our plan, is that sustainability of our savings.
Thank you. Director Pitney, that really goes to Senator Hoffman's original comment. We still, let me take it a different way. If we take $426 million of draw off of a proposed $2.7 billion remaining in CBR, what is going to prevent the three-quarter vote problem again if the administration is leaving that there? Because from the Senate's perspective, we put forward almost $1 billion worth of cuts last year, and we achieved about $800 million worth of cuts, $400 in the operating budget and over $475 million in the capital budget. So this particular plan, when nothing is done with the three-quarter vote, from our perspective, just causes increased spending because other people, maybe just one or two people who don't want to access the CBR, are going to hold out to actually add more funds back into the budget. So Senator Hoffman raised the question, is this administration doing something different with the three-quarter vote, or if we leave it the same, we feel, I feel, that we're still going to be leveraged at every point in the year to spend more money versus spend less money.
Senator McKinnon, I'll take one stab at it, and I'll let Commissioner Hoffbeck correct me if I'm misspeaking. It is the dynamic of the constitutional budget reserve is a dynamic in our state. It is a constitutional issue, and the three-quarter vote in all shapes and sizes will be in effect in fiscal year 17, and there's discussion whether it would be a continued discussion, but there is no way in this construct, regardless of whose plan were out there, that in fiscal year 17 we won't have a three-quarter vote. It is the dynamic, it is the Constitution, it is the fiscal situation we are in, and that means it's a broader balance. How do we're all in this boat together, and it's going to be that that balance between spending and revenue.
Director Pitney, and I'll go to Commissioner Hoffbeck. If we reverse your plumbing and put everything in the CBR, then we know what we're voting for, and both sides have the opportunity to argue about the three-quarter vote. If we reverse your plumbing and plumb everything into the CBR, we're faced with the same choice because we have a three-quarter vote that's going to require a draw each time. Commissioner Hoffbeck.
Chairman McKinnon, I think what Director Pitney said is true. This year, we just have no way to avoid that. And even bigger than that, $400 million is probably trying to convince folks to move $3 billion out and into the earnings reserve. If we can accomplish that, then we're down to about $150 million issue annually as far as a CBR vote. And I think that's more manageable. It's harder to leverage big numbers with that size of a CBR draw. So that's kind of ultimately the goal, is that we would get to the point where we aren't so dependent on the CBR that it can be leveraged as heavily as it can. But you're correct. I mean, we're not avoiding that vote with this plan.
So thank you for those comments. Lastly, I would say or assert that I believe that your 7% draw that you're showing us on this spreadsheet is overly optimistic. That number should be down around 4.25 for the draw or for the expected returns. And if you draw down to where you're at right now, you have to manage those funds at a different level. And so you can't, from my experience in reports of the past, as those funds become less, you have less ability to make the higher interest rate because they move into short-term cash call positions. So it has to have more liquidity in it, and so you're not going to get the rate of return. It's not going to be a shopping center that can roll off an unrealized gain or real estate payments that are going to guarantee you a fixed pay. So if you need that in your immediate cash reserve, scheduling a 7% draw, it's just, I would think it would be not recommended. And so instead of being the person who seems to be non-supportive or challenging, has the administration considered pooling all our assets under the Permanent Fund Corporation and eliminating all investment management in the Department of Revenue, because you'd have consolidated savings and they have short-term portfolio management, but they're used to doing that because of the dividend program. If we were on a structured call, it seems like we could stand up inside of the Permanent Fund Corporation, help for the legislature or for cash management in general, because your pooling would be basically an account spreadsheet versus what is actually done with the funds. Does that make sense? Has there been conversation about co-locating and eliminating all of our investment advisors in revenue. And I say that knowing that revenue and our team at revenue have actually outpaced the permanent fund on occasion. I don't know if it's every occasion, but on occasion our own investors. So please let them know we appreciate their work, and that's not what this is about, because they've returned higher at times, but it's the whole cash flow issue.
Chairman McKinnon, that discussion has been had, and the idea of some kind of Alaska Investment Corp that would include permanent fund, would include the retirement funds, would include some of the ongoing funds used for operations. It's an active discussion. We haven't landed on it, but we certainly have talked about it.
Commissioner, thank you. I know you and I have discussed it before, but the people of Alaska don't know that that's under discussion. And Senator Machicki.
Before we go, Madam Chair, Commissioner and Ms. Pitney, I appreciate you bringing a plan forward. No one wants to talk about slashing government severely. No one wants to talk about any use of earnings reserve dollars, and certainly no one wants to talk about new revenue from Alaskans. But reality is a funny thing. So I really appreciate you taking a swipe at a plan. It sounds like you have some flexibility. I think you know not every direction the administration wants to go is going to occur, but I very much appreciate you bringing something forward for us to start working with. These are all very tough choices, and be patient with us. We'll have lots of questions for you going forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Senator Dunleavy?
Madam Chair, are you prepared for closing statements? Is that what we're doing? Okay, just very briefly, again, thank you very much. It's a difficult job you have and we all have, obviously. And we'll get through this together, the whole state of Alaska. just very briefly, clarity. There may be some misunderstanding. I believe that it would be very difficult to close this gap through cuts alone. I do believe, though, that we need to focus on that issue this year or we won't get to it. And I'm not saying that the administration has defaulted to a pain avoidance process, but there's a different philosophy happening. Everyone has their own philosophy. But I do believe we need to focus on the reductions first. I do believe if we don't do that, we're going to miss some opportunity there. Also briefly, our office, like every other office, is examining revenue enhancement options and models. We're going through that. I just have the issue with it being premature, and I am a supporter of the Goldsmith model, although we need to understand that model needs to be flexible, and it takes into account certain things that if it doesn't happen, the model itself may have difficulty producing the results. I get that as well. I guess what I want to just make clear is I believe if we don't really do the hard work on the reductions, we'll just never get there. And then we have to go and ask the people of Alaska to pay for things that we may have overlooked, and that's the issue that I'm looking at. So, again, I appreciate what you folks are doing.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I don't know. Good job. It's a hard job, like everybody said. But, you know, there's another dynamic I'd like to... I talked about spending. There's two kinds of spending, right? Spending for services and then spending for investment. It'd be interesting if you've modeled it, if it's the will of the committee or individually bring by my office. I'd like to see what a $200 million capital construction budget does out there in the economy. Now, but... with a hypothetical sales tax applied or income tax applied, because that money's got to go full circle, because we're not the federal government, right? We can't just print money, but I'd like to see some returns on investments, so this committee, so I can see if the investments that we make, how that rotates through the economy, how it could create wealth. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator Hoffman?
No comments.
Senator Olson? Senator Machicki? Director Pitney, thank you for working on behalf of this administration and the people of Alaska. Commissioner Hoffbeck, we appreciate your participation. Please know this is part of the process, that we have hundreds of Alaska contacting our offices, asking questions, and the questions that you hear on the table today or in the future are reflective of constituents that have concerns, that believe government's not small enough, that we're cutting too much, that a particular program needs to be held harmless, that particular program should be cut. And so this is, I know it's easy to take it personal, so I just want you to know publicly that I appreciate your efforts. We all do. We all have been elected to try to push the envelope for our own individual districts and Alaskans, and I think it was Senator Dunleavy and others who said, we're going to get through this together. It's tough times, huge challenge, but Alaskans are tough people. We've got the heart, and we're going to do it. With that, tomorrow morning, Thursday, February 4th, in this room, we'll be hearing a presentation on state debt and the credit rating by Devin Mitchell. With that, we're adjourned.